Hello, and welcome to Awin Talks, the affiliate and partner marketing podcast. I'm your host, Rob Davidson from Awin's Global Strategy Team, and I'm joined today by Kevin Edwards, Awin's Global Strategy Director. Hi, Kev.
Hi, Rob. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. And I'm delighted to say our special guest co-host from the US, Alex Forsch, President of Awin US and ShareASale. Welcome, Alex. How are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
This is your podcast debut.
Oh my God, yes. I've been waiting all these years. What took you so long?
Well, I didn't want to put too much kind of pressure on you, so I don't want to make you too nervous.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
We've been taking a closer look at the US market on the podcast recently, and today is another great opportunity to do that with you joining us, as well as via our featured interviews as well on today's episode. So I didn't know if you knew this, Kev, or Alex for that matter. Today's episode is actually our 50th, which is quite a milestone to have reached. How many of those previous episodes have you listened to, Alex?
5.
10%, that's not bad.
those were US focused, definitely.
Yeah. Do you know what? I reckon Kevin's actually listened to less.
I've probably listened to more than that. It's okay. Probably not that many more, but yeah.
Do you fast forward through all the interviews and just listen to your own intro and outro sections?
Mainly just try and listen to my own voice. Try and get rid of yours. Obviously anything to do with Craig in, I typically avoid. Yes.
Well, we've done that definitively now for the podcast, haven't we?
So,
we are happy to have another couple of great interviews for this special episode. First up, we've got an interview with Awin's Chief Customer Officer, David Lloyd, who joined the business at the start of the year. David was interviewed recently by eMarketer. Their analyst, Patty Soltis, recently had him on their Behind the Numbers podcast. Because we felt it was such a good and interesting conversation about the state of the industry today, and his perspective on it, we thought we'd include it in today's episode as well. After that, we then have an interview with Mike McInerney from Martech Record, who are one of the leading partner marketing industry publications in the US. So I got the chance to sit down and chat with Mike about the state of the channel today, how it's been evolving recently, and where he feels that it's heading at the moment. So stay tuned for that particular conversation a bit later. But before that, Alex, given that you've joined us on the episode today, and you're based in California, aren't you?
Yeah, I moved here about a year ago. But ShareASale and Awin are headquartered in both Baltimore and Chicago. But with COVID and the company adopting a looser policy, like a little bit of a whenever, wherever situation, we have staff now based throughout the entire US.
Yeah. So whereabouts in California are you specifically?
I'm near San Diego, between San Diego and LA.
Right. Okay. You still aspiring for that Hollywood career or?
I leave that to my children, maybe. I think I'm a bit too old for that. But I've learned how to surf, you know, at least I took one lesson. So that's about it for me. That's my California experience.
Well, that's not bad. That's probably an upgrade on your ability to surf in Baltimore. I can't imagine there's many opportunities there. I wanted to ask you about the Awin US and ShareASale businesses. So for those listeners that are unfamiliar with the two entities, can you tell us a bit about how they operate alongside each other out in the States?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So when we acquired ShareASale in 2017 from Brian Littleton, which was ShareASale's founder, we were able to expand upon our client base and offering the US, which was the primary reason for that. And it really helped us to quickly catapult us to a top region within Awin Global. So in terms of points of differentiation, ShareASale operates on a self-service model. And as such, it attracts businesses of all sizes. So those who want to try out affiliate and those who have in-house teams or work with agencies to drive more growth online. ShareASale offers a very simple pricing model. It's low commitment with strong technology. And with the e-commerce boom and as the channel further diversified, we've been able to double its performance since the acquisition. So we're quite proud of that. And we support now over 8,000 merchants. And in partnership with hundreds of agencies. Awin traditionally offered support to a full, you know, offered everything from support to full service solution. And our door policies in the past prevented us really from working with micro SMEs in the past. You know, so that's where ShareASale really filled the void. But now with our access model, the lines are definitely becoming more blurry. However, I think we work with partners to identify the best platform for their needs. So typically we see merchants who favor a self-service model and are more focused on the US or want to work with ShareASell, and those mid to large size businesses looking for more strategic support and service, as well as a possible global expansion, they're exploring Awin.
Alex, just from looking at some of the stuff that's been published recently, that there's been quite a lot of information coming out of the US around the sort of state of the industry. It's been a while since Rob and I have been able to get over there. Obviously, COVID hasn't helped. So can you give us sort of a bit of a snapshot, your kind of understanding of the state of the US market, affiliate market at the moment?
Yeah, I think it goes from strength to strength, right? As shoppers moved online during COVID, the channel really exploded and welcomed a slew of new partners, which keeps it attractive, really. On the client side, we saw new agencies embracing the channel. We are now working with PR agencies, digital social media focus agency, which was typically an OPM space. And then also we welcomed a lot of traditional, more brick and mortar businesses, you know, as consumers moved online. And on the publisher side, we also welcomed a whole lot more partners in both in numbers and in types. So standout new partners are now influencers and technical solutions that have joined the space and make it quite interesting. So even though we're operating more in a recessionary market now, I believe the channel is still very attractive given its low-risk performance-based models. So with overall marketing spend cuts, we expect shorter term, we do believe the channel will still see continued investment.
Yeah, you mentioned the impacts that COVID has had on the channel and the industry. Obviously, last year was practically a write-off in terms of events and conferences were concerned, and that's been one of the kind of best opportunities, I think, sometimes for the industry, because, you know, it's still very much about direct relationships and partnerships, etc. But I know you were recently presenting at the Traffic and Conversion Summit in California, so not too far from home. How was the event, and what was it that you were talking about to audiences there?
Yeah, I mean, I think pre-COVID, it used to be about 10,000 attendees, so quite big, right? And slowly moving back, I think last year they saw a little over 2,000 attendees. This year, you know, they doubled that to over 4,000. It traditionally has attracted very small businesses and agencies in particular. So we decided to sponsor the agency track, and we're able to present on four total topics, including influencer, also how we basically enable a path to affiliate using e-commerce platforms. And then we talked about our agency solution, because obviously it's very focused on agencies as well. And this is the session that I spoke on, is how we can actually help drive marketing innovation, leveraging technology partners through this channel. So I think this is a really interesting discussion, because a lot of marketers will be faced with saving money, you know, as budgets get tighter. And I think knowing that the affiliate channel can actually be enabling, you know, the build out of digital capabilities, but still drive growth via the channel is really attractive. And I think a lot of people were excited to hear about the solutions that we now offer that also span the full customer cycle. So no longer traditionally just focus on pre-purchase, you know, but also help with things like on-site optimization, user experience optimization, driving more products into the cart, et cetera, as well as post-purchase, right? Turning customers into referral partners, et cetera, so drive more business overall. So I think a lot of people are really excited to understand that the channel has really evolved and offers more diversity than it ever has. And it can be a viable alternative as times get tougher.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that obviously really can resonate with an audience is the kind of success stories, you being able to kind of demonstrate how you solved problems for advertisers. And that obviously we use that as the basis of a lot of our own case studies, which we in turn into award entries. And you guys have enjoyed some success lately with the US Partnerships Awards. Can you just give us a little bit of a flavor as to some of the stuff that particularly stood out for you?
Yeah, it was the first US focus partner awards in the US. So I think they had a whole of 27 categories. It's quite a lot to choose from. I think we selected to put forward seven entries in total, and we ended up winning three, one of which was the Together We Solve That. And we were highlighting our ShareASell Shopify solution there, which is a really feature-rich app that allows merchants to basically, once they're on Shopify, connect their affiliate program directly into the Shopify store. And then with that, you know, manage product feeds through Shopify that carry through into Shareasale, you know, validate transactions, manage returns, etc. So really give merchants a lot of opportunity for efficiency and automation. And we were able to highlight that and obviously won the award for this. But also best use of creator content by a brand that was Zaven and Etsy. This is our, I think, third overall win. Etsy's on the forefront, really working with influencers and creators for a number of years and have really perfected that to an extent. And then also winning best content partnership. That was Zaven, Today's Business, which is an agency, and their support of Tomahawk Shade. So really small business that they're able to catapult through the channel and on our platform. So we're quite proud of all these wins.
Yeah, that last one in particular I thought was great because it was a relatively small brand, kind of unheralded, being guided by their agency to utilize media partnerships with influential writers, using the Zaven platform to obviously track and measure those partnerships. And we spoke to Joe Sanfilippo from their agency on the last episode to the podcast. So if you're interested in hearing more about that partnership, then do feel free to kind of do a rewind and go back to episode 49. But for now, thanks for kind of joining us on the intro. We'll see you on the other side of the interviews, Alex, for our outro. So we'll jump into those now. A little later, we speak to Mike McInerney, the founder of Martech Record. But right now, Zaven's David Lloyd chats to e-marketers Patty Solstice.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really excited to have a conversation with you about everything that you're doing at Zaven, and certainly think that it'll clear up a lot of questions people have, especially when it comes to digital performance marketing, brand marketing, and how all these things tie together. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, Patty, it's a real pleasure to be here with you. Thanks very much.
Yeah. So I was thinking that we could kind of start this off by talking a little bit more about what all of this is, because I think that people want to understand it and they want to know more about it, but I think there's still a little fuzz around it for people. And if you could clear that up in talking about what you all do and how it really can impact performance for an organization would be really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. So Zaven is a roughly 20-year-old business, traditionally known as an affiliate marketing company. Affiliate marketing is sometimes now referred to as partner marketing. And I think those two terms are used interchangeably. And really what we're doing is we're trying to connect advertisers. So we work with over 20,000 advertisers globally, many of whom are in the US, across Zaven and Shareasale. We connect those advertisers to hundreds of thousands of publishers and partners. And what we're able to do through our technology is to help those hundreds of thousands of publishers to monetize their websites. So they're able to serve offers, serve advertising, serve different kinds of content connected to the advertisers. We're then able to help the advertisers to track the performance of everything they're doing with those publishers. And then hopefully through that, creating a really good and diverse group of partnerships across a huge number of advertisers and a huge number of publishers.
I love that you're talking about how you can track the metrics and get great measurement inside of it. And I know there was a report that just came out from the Performance Marketing Association that talked a lot about this. And the industry is growing really fast and the outcomes are changing. Can you talk a little bit more about what the report found and dig into that a little bit more? I know Zaven was one of the seven leading affiliate networks in the study. So I know you have a lot of knowledge on this.
No, absolutely. And you know, it's even better than you say, because we effectively operate two of the seven networks, right? Because we have Zaven, which is our global brand and is a platform in its own right. But we also have Shareasale, which is a US-based affiliate marketing platform as well, which Zaven acquired a few years ago, is a leading platform in the US. So Zaven and Shareasale are, in fact, two of the platforms mentioned in the report. And what the report talked about was the fact that the affiliate marketing industry has grown phenomenally over the last 3 years. So if you go back to pre-pandemic, there's actually been a 50% year-on-3-year growth, so about a 14% annual growth rate in the industry. And what that's turned into is that advertisers are now spending $9 billion a year across the industry in the US. And they're generating $71 billion worth of revenue from the channel, right? And that is real revenue, real tracked revenue. If I have another moment, perhaps one thing I could explain, which I think is a really good difference between affiliate marketing and a bunch of other marketing channels, is that when an advertiser makes a sale with an affiliate, they have to verify that sale, right? So not only do they make the sale, but they have to verify that the customer didn't return the item, that the sale actually took place. And so when I say there's $71 billion worth of revenue generated over the last year from advertisers in the US across affiliate marketing, that is verified sales, right? It is already factoring out all of the returns, any of the other activity that a retailer or a vendor might normally factor out. It is real ROI. So it turns into 12-to-1 ROI. It's a true ROI for those advertisers. And it's just been a real, I would say, quiet success story of the last 3 years, not just in the US, but globally.
You know, that's pretty amazing because it's making me think about the customer journey. And I know you wanted to talk a little bit about the clock model and how those two things mirror, but clearly something's working inside of there to pull this together to get that kind of ROI. So could you talk a little bit more about the clock model and how that reflects the customer journey and what impact it's having?
Yeah, for sure. I think, so the clock model, this is something I think Scott Galloway's talked about, and what he's effectively done is to say, well, if you imagine the customer journey as a clock divided up into 12 one-hour segments, there's probably about 4 hours as a customer where you're pre-purchase, right? Where you are being introduced to a brand, researching, getting inspired, maybe making a decision. Then there's maybe a four-hour segment, which you can consider the purchase area where you're really making that final decision, getting over the line, buying the thing you want to buy. And then there's 4 hours, which you could say from sort of 8 till 12 on the clock, which is post-purchase, where you build loyalty, there's customer service built in, and hopefully a customer becomes a long-time customer. And affiliate marketing, I think, historically found itself positioned in about 1 hour of the segment, this really pure performance segment where you say, well, somebody's already decided they're going to buy. Now we have to get them over the line and just make sure they convert on the website and get that sale. And historically, that was the view. And, you know, when we looked at the hundreds of thousands of partners, you know, using affiliate marketing with Abram, what we were able to say is that actually we play all across the clock, actually in every single one of those hours, pre, during, and post-purchase, there are partners who are playing a role there. And to give you the example, right, we have content sites, we have review sites, we have influencers, tens of thousands, in fact, hundreds of thousands of influencers working with Abram and working with advertisers to raise brand awareness for the advertisers we work with. We have the very traditional affiliate marketing sites, the cashback, voucher codes, those deal sites that help you get over the line. If you're just about to convert, but you need a final push to get over the line as a customer, of course, we have a lot of those sites as well. But what we also have, and we can talk a bit more about this, I think, increasingly, is a bunch of tech partners. So people who can help with post-purchase for advertisers, publishers, and for consumers, where you can say, well, actually, somebody's now decided to buy. How do I help them to fill their basket? How do I help them to think about what new products they could be purchasing? And what we're seeing is thousands of SMEs we work with are starting to use those tech partners. So not just to get the conversion, but to increase the conversion, increase loyalty. But not just SMEs, businesses like Samsung are working with us in that way to use tech partners to increase loyalty, to increase basket size. And so when you step back from affiliate marketing, I think we can look at it and say, it's not the traditional model anymore. It is not a, you know, last click wins pure performance channel anymore. It is a channel that can play all across those 12 hours of the clock, if you can imagine that pre, during, and post-purchase.
You know, that's interesting. You said a lot of things, and I'm going to build the next couple questions off of what you just said there. And you touched on influencer marketing just a little bit as you were talking there. And, you know, it leads me to wonder, how can advertisers still achieve brand awareness goals through partnerships like that? How does it help them connect with the customer?
Yeah, you know, it's super interesting. I joined Awin from Alibaba, where I was kind of running operations in Northern Europe. And a lot of times I was talking to advertisers about what in China referred to as KOLs, key opinion leaders, and live streaming. And live streaming had become about 10% of e-commerce in China by the time I left, right? So they'd really cracked this challenge of how do I link brand activity to performance, right? Get people watching a video where someone's demoing a product and then on my smartphone, click and buy. And I don't think that in what we could broadly term Western markets, consumers are going to demonstrate the exact same behavior as Chinese consumers. But what we can see is that there is an opportunity to get branding and performance a bit closer together to create better branding activities for advertisers, where influencers, for example, are able to demonstrate products, to talk about products, to deliver a conversion for an advertiser, which may happen in the moment, but which may happen like 2, 3, 4 weeks later, when the consumer is actually in the moment where they really want to purchase. But what we're able to do is to say, well, actually, why can't we measure some of that brand activity? Why can't we see what the impact is on the brand, on the searches on Google, right? We worked with Feel Unique on an influencer campaign across AWIN. When they did that piece of activity with us, they saw that brand searches went up 50% on Google, right? So we're able to track a brand metric from the activity they did with us. They also saw a real increase in new users and in sales. What we're saying is, why can't we start to track that activity and bring branding and performance closer together? It will deliver better results for brands, better results for influencers and other publishers, but it's also going to deliver better results for consumers because the content they see is going to be more impactful, richer, and hopefully get them closer to where they want to get.
You know, it's funny, you've mentioned this several times, measurement. So I think we should spend just our last couple minutes talking about that piece of it because it all comes down to measurement and what was the return. And, you know, we're all looking at managing and measuring our own marketing ecosystems. So it'd be great to hear about the advantage that brands can build with their own marketing ecosystem through affiliate partnerships.
Yeah, I think it's a, you know, it's a really great way you put it, actually, this idea of building your own ecosystem. So I think historically, and in fact, even currently, if you think about digital marketing, you know, we tend to think about the same big names, right? We tend to think about Google, Meta, Amazon, and really building within those platforms. And it was similar, by the way, in China, right? You know, there was a lot you could do within Alibaba as a single platform within Tencent. One of the things I really get excited about when talking about AWIN, and one of the reasons I joined the business earlier this year, is I think we in the affiliate and in the partner industry have an opportunity to help brands build their own ecosystems, to build more diverse, but still really, really effective and efficient and measurable campaigns with a variety of partners. So instead of relying on those very, very large tech companies, instead of relying on just those single investments, they can think about, well, actually, how do I do something more diverse? And how do I take a bit more control of my activities? And it comes back to what we talked about at the start, which is, you know, we have hundreds of thousands of publishers and partners working with AWIN, and we can give access to advertisers to all of those partners. They can choose the ones that work for them. They can choose the ones who drive the best performance, choose the ones who drive brand metrics, choose the ones who perhaps are influencers who are going to really most chime with their brand. They can manage all of those partners in one place. They can measure them all in one place, and they can create their own campaigns with a huge array of different partners, have full control and full visibility over everything they're doing, but really feel like it's their campaign, where really feel like it's something they control. And that's why I get really excited about affiliate and partner in the future, and why I think so many brands are investing more in this space, because it gives you scale, right? $71 billion worth of sales just across tracked sales in the US last year. It gives you measurability, it gives you scale, but what it also gives you is a ton of control and a ton of diversity. And I think that is really, really exciting for advertisers as they look to diversify their activity, but still have the same control and the same efficiency.
You know, that's interesting because you talked about simplifying the ecosystem. And I think a lot of people look at tech and immediately are intimidated by it or think it's complex or very expensive. But is there a way to simplify that part down as well as you're working with an organization such as yours?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is really the mission for us, right? If you look at it, we're facing two ways. We have tens of thousands of advertisers, hundreds of thousands of publishers. Within that, there is a lot of potential for complexity, right? There's a lot of potentially different directions something can go, especially if you're talking about different kinds of partnerships, branding, performance, technology partnerships. What I see our job as is making that as simple as possible, giving a simple interface that connects you as a brand to the right partners at scale and makes it easy for you to choose them, easy for you to manage them, easy for you to measure them. Same for publishers. How do we help publishers and partners find advertisers, the ones who are going to drive the best performance for them, help them to monetize and give the best offers, deals, and campaigns to the users who are on their sites? And I think we do a really, really good job of that. And part of this, and you know, one of the reasons it's so great to talk to you is I think we, as an industry, not just as AWIN, need to shout about that some more because we do a great job here for users, for consumers, for brands, and for publishers. And we need to do that more and make it ever, ever simpler.
You know, I agree with you on that completely because the more simplified an internal process can become, the more simplified it can be for the customer, and their experience can then grow exponentially with an organization. And we all know the benefits of loyalty, retention, and advocacy, and that's really what we're all aiming for. So I think it sounds like that just wraps it all up perfectly. I want to thank you so much, David. It's such a pleasure to sit here and talk with you, and I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you, Patty.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for joining us today on the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm great, Rob. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Whereabouts is here? Whereabouts are you based at the moment?
I'm at the moment on the Upper West Side of New York City in Manhattan, I'm not always here. I've traveled quite a bit, but I get to be home today, so happy about that.
Yeah, I heard you were recently across the pond, actually, a bit closer to where I'm based. That was NFL. No, not NFL. It was college football. You made that distinction to me before.
Yeah.
It's quite a different game.
Well, yeah, it's the same game, but just not as high quality players. Yeah, I was in Dublin for a American college football game, which don't ask me how that came about or why that existed. But, you know, the second I heard it was happening with my team, like I had to be there. So it was actually a blast.
The all important question is, did your team win?
We did, which was Northwestern beat Nebraska, which was a nice cherry on top of a fun weekend. So if we have any Nebraska listeners, they might be upset. So, but they were gracious fans.
Shout out to all the Nebraska listeners, mm-hmm. if anyone talks. So for listeners that are unfamiliar with Martech Record, can you just give us a bit of background, a bit of overview on the site and how it all got started?
Yeah, well, up front, Martech Record is an independent trade publication that publishes reviews of products and services in the affiliate space. We host events on important topics. We do some analysis of the industry. We cover kind of broad things like mergers and acquisitions, and then very specific things like attribution and how that's changing, and you know, how publisher models are changing as well. And so that's kind of who we are. And our audience is mainly affiliate managers at agencies, at brands, at publishers, at networks like yourself, who are interested in, you know, the business of affiliate marketing and how it impacts, you know, how brands spend money and how publishers employ different tactics. And how it got started is, you know, I'm not an affiliate person. I like to make that clear up front, is that the people who we feature are, my background is in trade publishing. I worked at McGraw-Hill, which is a big American publishing house, for almost a decade. And there I was in charge of their digital media business. They had a series of trade publications that covered big global markets like energy and aviation and construction. And I loved the business. It was fascinating. It was this business that facilitated commerce in these giant markets. You know, we had crucial information that, you know, helped people buy and sell, you know, oil and gas and build homes and things like that. And I watched the business kind of be destroyed by market forces. You know, the digitization, the digital transformation of the world was not something we could keep up with. And it was, you know, necessary, but a little sad for me. And so when I stumbled my way into the affiliate world, I found that this was this fascinating market that had potential to really help the publishing industry. But one of the big issues I found, it was really hard to find information, right? I wanted to understand which platform was the best for different types of advertisers and publishers, you know, how you you know, actually built an affiliate program. And, you know, the best thing I could find was going to the conferences and asking people, right? Which is great. That's a necessary piece of a tool for affiliate marketers. But, you know, markets that need to grow need quality, transparent information to grow. They need things that, you know, benchmarks people can agree on so they can build business models. You know, they need advice on how to employ services. And if you have some of that knowledge and you can share it, you know, industries can grow a lot faster. And so, you know, my idea was, hey, how do we start a publication that allows people to get, you know, trusted, transparent information about the affiliate market. So we started Martech Record in what you and I were talking about earlier. I started it in kind of February of 2020. The whole idea was a series of live events, you know, in kind of markets in the U.S. I had this great plan, go out, you know, we'll have like a bunch of, you know, speakers in different cities. And then, of course, that plan blew up, and I thought, well, you know, this is not going to work. And then, you know, lo and behold, people were really interested in getting on Zoom calls because they had nothing else to do. People like yourselves had budgets for events that weren't being spent. And so we kind of had the perfect storm, and we had a topic people wanted to hear about, which was affiliate marketing. And so, you know, there was a month of kind of freaking out and wondering what I was going to do next. And then we just put on our first, you know, webinar, and it worked. And we kind of went from there and started publishing, you know, data and webinars. And since then, we've, I don't know, we've probably had close to 30 webinars. We've had two live events. We've published two industry surveys where we gather data from the industry that reviews the products and services in the industry from an independent standpoint. And I think we've established ourselves as kind of the most credible, you know, source of independent information in the market. So that's who we are, and that's how we get started. I hope that wasn't too much information, but obviously I enjoy talking about it.
That's a great backstory. Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned about kind of like that need for objective information, kind of qualified data around the state of the industry. And obviously, I mean, your primary focus is obviously on the affiliate and partner marketing industry in the US. And we've just had the Performance Marketing Association who published their own industry study for the first time in, I think, like 3 or 4 years now. The last one was back in 2018. So I wonder what you made of that report and whether or not the findings aligned with some of your own work that you've been doing at Martech Record with your interviews and some of your own kind of like surveys that you've been conducting more recently.
Yeah, well, first, I think it's awesome that they did it. I mean, it's long overdue as well. You know, I don't know how many times people have called me and said, you know, how big is the market and, you know, what direction is it going? So it's great they did it. And about a year ago, I think when kind of Impact was really focused on trying to go public, we did a lot of back of the envelope math trying to determine kind of how big the overall market was. And, you know, we came in somewhere around, you know, 8 billion. And that was kind of my business school back of the envelope math. So I gave everyone a caveat. And I think they just came in at 9 billion. So I think, you know, directionally, you know, since we both came to a similar number, I thought it was pretty good. I would have liked to see a little more detail in the methodology on how exactly they came up with that number. But I also think that the next step here is understanding what channels are controlling these budgets. There was an implication, at least to me in the survey, that this is all flowing through traditional affiliate teams. And I would love a breakdown of that because I really think that's changing. I think that, you know, the most important trend that's going on right now might be that, you know, different marketing teams are employing affiliate. And so maybe that number is far bigger. And from what I saw in the survey, they really didn't get outside of kind of the traditional affiliate world. And that's where I'd be kind of really curious to learn more.
Yeah. What do you think are the implications of that if affiliate teams aren't necessarily the primary budget holders or even, you know, the exclusive budget holders for what's going on in the channel in terms of, I guess, the further growth of the industry, the kind of like wider buy-in to the model, the channel, however you want to kind of frame it, what it is. I wonder kind of if you've got other teams, other departments that are doing some affiliate activity, but it's not necessarily quantified in that manner or that way. Does that have an effect on its future evolution as an industry?
I think it depends on who you are, right? I think from an overall marketing standpoint, it has a very positive effect, right? I think the big challenge in marketing has always just been measurement, right? If you can't measure something, no matter how good of a tool it is, marketing teams don't tend to use it because, you know, marketers don't get paid bonuses if they're hitting KPIs that, you know, aren't relevant to the CMO, right? So if you're in a world where people are now, you know, pulling affiliate KPIs into their overall marketing budget, you know, I think that's just a very good thing overall because you now have more diversified spend and diversified measurement. You know, it's kind of like your financial portfolio, right? You're able to kind of like take advantage of diversification, right? So from a broad perspective, I think there's absolutely a big effect. You know, it's different tools, different tactics, each channel can be a little bit smarter about, you know, how they spend their money. If you get real micro and you're talking about kind of our world, right, which is the affiliate world, I think there's probably some threats, right? You know, if you have PR teams that are now figuring out, you know, that they need to talk to the commerce editors they, you know, there's a chance someone might take your job, right? If you're an affiliate manager, because they might show a better ROI, or they might, you know, be able to, you know, do things in a different way that, you know, show some degree of effectiveness. So, you know, I think this is where we're going to start seeing some separation in the industry between the good affiliate teams and the not so good ones. You know, every channel has good teams and bad teams. So, you know, for me, if you're an affiliate person, like learning to collaborate with the other channels and learning to be the person that's able to connect the dots for them is crucial. And I think that's going to be tough, because I think affiliate traditionally has kind of sat very far outside of the rest of the marketing team and has been very used to kind of just delivering a number and kind of not ignoring, but, you know, not having kind of that be a big part of their role as that collaboration. So I think that's going to be real important going forward.
Yeah, it's a really interesting tension between, does affiliate and partner marketing grow and absorb maybe some of those PR functions because of the kind of performance basis of the mechanic, or do the processes and mechanics of affiliate get absorbed into those kind of other established departments that already exist, and they just simply start to kind of follow the same kind of methodology that we would be quite familiar with within the affiliate industry? I mean, that's kind of a rhetorical question. I don't expect you to have an answer, but I just think it's quite an interesting tension that's going on there.
It's a really interesting tension. And my answer would be, it really depends on the organization, right? Mm. If I were an affiliate person, I would look at my organization and kind of try to understand what kind of organization is. Is it a performance marketing based organization that measures based on performance? If it is, I think you're in a good position to be the kind of team that, you know, is kind of leading the charge, right? And if you are leading that charge, you should be figuring out how to help the PR teams, you know, incorporate different kinds of measurement, right? If you're an organization that's, you know, maybe more traditional or brand focused, you know, those teams are probably going to be the one who get attention and lead the charge, and, you know, they're going to be in a leadership position. And but doesn't mean you shouldn't still be collaborating, right? I mean, you know, otherwise they're just going to kind of keep giving more responsibility to other teams. And the way to kind of survive, I would think, is, you know, to figure out how to be useful to the people who kind of have the attention of the leadership in the organization.
Yeah. Just to focus back on some of your own content and output at Martech Record. I mean, you guys have made a real effort, I think, to hear from voices that traditionally sit outside of the industry, who maybe aren't kind of 100% affiliate focused or immersed in that industry. Particularly, I think, in the investment community, we've seen a lot of interviews that you've conducted with figures that are looking at acquisition, M&A activity, kind of where the investment money is kind of flowing at the moment. So I wonder, what are these figures' perception of the industry right now? And from your conversations with them, what do they see as the pros and cons of the affiliate model today?
Well, I mean, I think big picture, right, is the pro they see is that e-commerce is growing, right? And any investor you talk to, or at least I've talked to, has the view that we're at very early stages in terms of just pure e-commerce adoption, right? And, you know, I mean, there's a baseball kind of analogy that's used of what inning we're in, which everyone's always like, we're still in the first inning, right? And for our non-baseball fans, there are 9 innings. So the very early stages of the game, right? And so all of them are, you know, very bullish broadly, right? And they'll always push back and say, yeah, we're in these ups and downs right now. But, like, you know, at some point, you know, everything is going to be sold online. Not everything, I'm sure, but, you know, near everything, right? And the evidence that always gets pointed to is, look, you know, 10 years you had books and shoes that were being sold online. You know, now we've got mattresses and healthcare, right? These are things at higher price points that are more complex sales that if you had told me 10 years ago I'd buy online, I would have, you know, thought you were crazy. So there's this natural kind of growth in e-commerce where things are going to get more expensive and more complicated. And that will require content that is more trusted, right? That is, you know, more educational. And it will require technology that can track that. And it will require advertisers to build better attribution. All these things we all kind of know about, right? And so, you know, from a broad market perspective, I think that that's, you know, kind of where we are. And if kind of recent trends don't make you bullish, like I don't know what will, right? You know, advertisers have finally seen, you know, the risk in concentrating their spend in a few platforms, right? Like, I think forever it's like, all right, search and social. Now they understand that there's huge risk to doing that, right? So they're looking for kind of other channels to do that. And consumers are learning to trust content, right? Good content, right? Or they're, maybe the better way of saying that is they're learning to differentiate between good and bad content. And publishers are seeing that and starting to, you know, put more effort into producing good content, right? And look, there's a reason the Wall Street Journal, who's a, you know, conservative organization, just launched an affiliate site. That would have been kind of unthinkable a few years ago, right? And so to me, if the Wall Street Journal, who is as conservative as it gets with kind of launching new stuff and trying things out and, you know, doing these things that publishing companies were very nervous about doing just a few years ago, if they're doing that, you know, I think that's an indication that we're in a pretty bullish space, even if you see the market going down. Now, as I said before, right, like here's the maybe the bearish part of this is if you think all of that growth is going to be concentrated among like affiliate teams, I think you're naive, right? You're going to have competition from some smart, aggressive people who want to help manage these budgets, right? And so, you know, I think that's where we come back to this collaboration. I don't think you're going to succeed in any channel unless you get really good at collaborating.
I mean, talking about wider progress in the US industry more recently, do you think where has that been occurring most, do you think? Do you think it's an improvement in standards? Is it new technology innovation? Is it the publisher diversity that we've seen with maybe more content commerce and media houses kind of taking the channel a bit more seriously and kind of building out their own internal teams to handle those partnerships? What aspects do you think stand out to you as where we're seeing the biggest growth?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no question technology is getting better. I mean, Awin's a good example of that, right? And it's allowing marketers to make smarter decisions, right? Like, that's one thing. I think the marketers are getting, you know, maybe partly because of better technology and better data, are getting better at reaching across the channel, at measuring, at kind of collaborating. But to me, the fundamental change is that more publishers are driving real revenue from the affiliate market, right? Like when publishers make more money, they are able to then create more investment into the industry, right? So when BuzzFeed went public and Dotdash bought Meredith and their investor deck was pushed out, right? Investors and leaders of publishers suddenly had a proxy, right? For how much money you could make in this industry, right? You know, both of those organizations predicted that roughly half of their, you know, billions of dollars in revenue were going to come through the affiliate model, right? And so that allowed other publishers to put together business models and go to the leadership in their organization and say, hey, I need to hire this many people, right? I need this many dev resources, right? And because there's a proxy and because people could say, yeah, look, other people have done this, that drove a huge amount of investment in the industry, which includes a huge amount of hiring, which is why you're seeing a huge shortage of talent in this industry, which I think overall is, you know, a very good thing that will get worked out over time, because what will happen is, you know, more people who want jobs will say, I've got to get good at this and I've got to learn this, right? And for me, it really reminds me of back, would be about 10, 12 years ago, when the New York Times put huge investment into their subscription model, right? They built their own subscription tool at a time when people just didn't believe that people would pay for digital content, you know, and people forget that now. It was a short time ago that the general consensus in the publishing space was, you know, like people aren't going to pay for digital. The only way to make money is through like a banner ad, you know, and that was 2010, 2011. And the New York Times went out and now they drive more of their revenue through subscription than they do advertising. They've white labeled their subscription tool and, you know, tons of people started using it. Right. And so, because the New York Times was a proxy, it was a publicly traded company, people could look at that and say, I'm going to make investments now. And now you see organizations, you know, from a, you know, big like the New York Times to tiny ones like my company employing subscription and selling content online. And so I think it's a similar comparison.
Well, I'm just going to ask a final question here, actually, just to kind of round off our kind of overview on the US market and where you see it standing right now. And inevitably ask you about the future and what excites you most about the industry today, where you see that there are those growth areas that have the potential to actually transform affiliate and partner marketing as we kind of move through the next few years, I guess? It's a bit of a crystal ball question, but I'm always interested to hear what people have to say in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, I can't get away from the publishing part of this, right? As someone who kind of grew up in the old, I grew up in a very kind of like old school conservative publishing shop, you know, watched kind of the destruction of that model. And I'm now watching, you know, the whole industry be rebuilt. And, you know, for the first time in a decade, I think we're actually in a really, really wonderful spot. And it's maybe a little naive. So for me, it's that the publishing industry finally has a way to diversify its revenue again. And I think this doesn't get talked about much, but, you know, if you go back 20 years, whenever, successful publishers had several ways of making money, right? They had a subscription revenue stream, right? They had an ad model, right? They had a classified model. And the publishers that were the most successful were able to blend that so that, you know, at different economic times, they could, you know, shift the model a little bit and still kind of have a healthy business. And that got chipped away at, right? You know, subscription went away immediately. Classifieds went away first, right? You know, Craigslist came out and that just eliminated classified revenue for the most part, right? Subscription revenue went away because suddenly content was free and that was kind of general knowledge. And then people weren't willing to pay for banner ads. And so all of those models got destroyed. And that's, you know, being rebuilt now, right? So subscription, as we talked about before, the Times kind of solved that and other people have adopted that. And now you're seeing kind of healthy growth in subscription. I mean, the biggest evidence to me is Wirecutter, which is an affiliate site, is now charging a subscription to access their reviews that they make money on, right? And so if there's a better piece of evidence that, you know, quality content wins out, I don't know what there is.
We spoke to Wirecutter early in the year, actually, because they got named in the Power 100 list that we published at the start of the year. And I spoke to Leilani Hahn over there. And
it was
a really fascinating discussion, actually, because I put that question to her because they got acquired by the New York Times. And suddenly there was this subscription model suddenly being erected in a paywall on content that had previously been available for nothing. And it was all previously premised upon an affiliate kind of commerce strategy, right? Inevitably, it drew some kind of questions around, is this going to kill off the ability for you to monetize content in the traditional affiliate sense? And she said, you know, it's a hybrid. It's about kind of diversifying the commercial strategies. And we know that we have a really kind of like keen, loyal readership that are willing to kind of pay for the subscription and to access our high quality kind of product reviews and everything. And the kind of affiliate stuff is still going to continue to be a kind of supplement to that. And I think so far it seems to be a really effective tactic for them.
Well, it's certainly a very compelling message to advertisers to say that our reviews are so trusted, people are paying to read them, right? So I think that's probably very compelling. But for me, just the fact that, you know, if you're a good publisher who's publishing quality content, you can now make money through advertising, through subscription, and through an affiliate model, kind of means, you know, we're at a point where, you know, good publishers can have diversified revenue streams again, which allow them to kind of get through these tough times and grow, you know, rapidly in big times. And so as someone who kind of slogged through the tough times of that, that's just really exciting to me. And I think that affiliates playing a huge role in that. And to kind of go a little farther afield on that is, look, you know, bad content, misinformation, you know, has caused a lot of problems in our world. And, you know, the business model is part of that, you know, not being able to make money and yet being able to, you know, push out terrible content and have people kind of get addicted to it is not a good thing in the world. And if you can find a model for quality content at scale, I think you can address some of those problems, right? I think even the biggest and best organizations have had to succumb a little bit to kind of writing to the base. And if you can diversify your revenue streams, you don't have to necessarily write to the base anymore, right? You have a scalable model where you can kind of try to write to the middle instead of the base. And so I think it's an important thing for publishing, but I also think it's an important thing for the world. And you know, I don't know if I'm ready to say like affiliates saving the world yet, but
I think it's
important.
I did actually do a presentation that said, I think it said like affiliate marketing can save the internet a few years ago, and I meant it slightly tongue-in-cheek, but only slightly, because I think there is a genuine argument to be made along those lines. So
I think that the affiliate model helping to diversify publisher revenue streams plays a small role in, you know, helping us create, you know, better, broader based content that ultimately saves the world. Yes.
Yeah.
So well, we're all doing our part.
Yeah, I think that I couldn't have possibly ended on any finer point. So thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me today.
Anytime, Rob. I really enjoyed it. And thanks for chatting.
Thanks to Mike there for speaking with us, and also to eMarketer for allowing us to use their interview with David. Now, some recent event updates and notices from us here at AWIN. This podcast is scheduled for release just before the UK Industry Conference PI Live begins on the 18th of October. And listeners who are attending that event can come and chat to us in person at the AWIN stand. Both Kev and I will be there. Alex, I presume you're not flying all the way out from California to join us in the rainy London from sunny California.
But we have, one representative from the US. It's Molly, and she's there to present booking along with booking.
Great. Well, not to mention, you can also hear from David, who's going to be at the doing a presentation on the main stage on Tuesday, the first day of the conference, at 10 to 3 in the afternoon. David's session is titled Exploding the Funnel, How Partners are Providing Value Far Beyond the Last Click. And he'll be discussing the diverse array of partnerships in the channel today. Now, Kev, you're also planning to present some new industry insights there as well, right?
Yeah, so it's a bit of an ad hoc session that we sort of have shoehorned in. We asked the organisers if they'd give us a little bit of a lunchtime slot. So they don't typically do stuff that much at lunchtime, but in conjunction with some other networks and agencies, we've pulled together an industry state of the industry survey that we've asked advertisers and agencies to complete. It's still open, but by the time you listen to this, it will be closed. However, we will be publishing the findings. We will probably do our own work on it from an AWIN point of view, but we are going to be presenting that PI Live at lunchtime on day one as well. So I believe it's at 12:30. It's on the stage that's in the main hall. And this is sort of more of a qualitative survey that kind of helps support the more sort of quantitative data that we get earlier in the year from the IAB and PwC, which that kind of shows the sort of general growth trends, whereas this will be looking at sort of some of the more sort of qualitative feedback from advertisers about how they're feeling about the industry, what types of affiliates that they see the most value in, where they want to invest their time, whether they think that, their feelings on things like affiliate tracking, how well they think the affiliate channel does in comparison to other channels they might be using, things that they really like about it, things that they wish that we would do better. And we've also got a question in there which it specifically is asking around a question around sort of the current cost of living crisis and whether people feel that they will be investing in the channel more to help support their marketing and sales efforts this year, or whether they'll be investing less. So we should be, as I say, we'll be able to give a snapshot of those findings. We have about sort of 20-25 minutes to whip through all of the questions that we've asked advertisers. We've got a decent number of submissions so far across a whole different range of sectors and advertiser sizes and advertiser experience. So I'm hoping that, as I say, it will be a good snapshot of the industry. Day one, 12:30, that's the 18th of October.
Right. Well, day one, our success or failure the night before at the Global Performance Marketing Awards may dictate how cogent you are on stage. I think we've got 11 awards that we're up for in total, so fingers crossed for the ceremony. And thank you as well if any listeners have voted for us in the best network or one to watch categories, for which our very own Michelle O'Sullivan is a strong contender. Now, Alex, you've also announced a new strategic partnership with a solution called Certify out in the US. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have, as I mentioned earlier, we have over 8,000 clients live on Chairsir currently, of which many are small and minority owned. And with Certify, these businesses have now a chance to become diverse business certified. We are certified. It's about $90. I think you need to present your business license, and that's all it takes. And then, you know, we give them really a platform now to market themselves to publishers that are looking to work with such businesses. So I think it's a really great way to elevate those businesses and drive more growth to them.
Yeah. And I imagine that a lot of those are likely to be, not all of them, but likely to be maybe smaller businesses. And so I think anything that like that, that can help to grow them is a good thing. Now, speaking of small businesses, Kev, we're also up for an award in that space soon too, right?
Yeah, so we entered the British Small Business Awards earlier this year. It's the first time we've kind of ever really done anything like this. You know, obviously the likes of the Performance Marketing Awards, which we've done for years. This sort of was, it's a bit of a punt, really. I mean, we're up against a lot of other companies doing lots of other different diverse things. But we decided to put A1 Access in as Technology Provider of the Year, just simply because we feel that the A1 Access product has really resonated with that SME audience. We've had some amazing testimonials and feedback from customers who are using it. But also, we're really, and one thing you mentioned, Michelle, one thing that Michelle's really passionate about is making sure that we get out into the SME community. So sort of like partnering with people that aren't necessarily traditional affiliate businesses, partnering with trade organizations, small business organizations. And so this was sort of a bit of a hat tip to that, really. So we decided to take a bit of a punt on this and see whether we could we could pick up an award for technology provider and hopefully, as I say, take affiliate marketing to a broader SME audience, which is no doubt something that we'll be looking to do well into 2023 anyway.
Yeah, well, that award announcement should be coming out about the same time as this episode goes live, actually. So fingers crossed for that. And we'll, if we win, we'll mention it on the next episode. If we don't, it will
disappear
into the ether. Yeah. And finally, I wanted to alert listeners to our Q4 Black Friday predictions, which are currently being published on a weekly basis. So a selection of our staff have been sharing their predictions for what is likely to be a particularly tumultuous peak trading period. And you can catch those on the AWIN blog, as well as across our various social channels, where you'll see the authors appearing in a series of videos outlining what they have seen in the Q4 crystal ball, which is a pretty difficult thing to pin down right now, I'd say. Right, I think that's
actually,
about it.
Rob, can I just quickly reference, you've just reminded me. So hopefully by the time this goes out, this will be live. But we are, some of you may remember that last year we did a performance tracker on the AWIN website, which basically looked at performance of the network across lots of different sectors. You could kind of really drill it down into sort of by specific markets, regions, etc., by clicks, sales, revenue, all of those kind of different metrics. We are looking to repeat that again. We want to run that from with data throughout October. And so hopefully by the time you listen to this episode, it should be live. So if you go on to awin.com, and this is still TBC, but we're hoping that the data will be daily updating as well. Last year it was weekly updating. We've kind of gone back to the drawing board with the report, had a look at it, and hopefully, as I say, that's going to be something that's daily updating. We had some really good feedback last year from both publishers and advertisers alike, because it gives you kind of the ability to sort of benchmark your own performance. So we hope that that people are going to really see the benefit of that. No doubt we will talk about that more on a future episode.
Yeah, I'll include a link to that particular tracker in the blog landing page for this episode so that people can find their way to it fairly easily. Yeah, that is all the time we've got on today's episode.
Can I get quick?
Oh my God.
Quick win. Is there time for just one plug? I just wanted to highlight that the MThink survey is out, and traditionally A1 and Shareasale have ranked really high. So we'd love to ask you for your vote again as best CPS network. You have through November to vote for us. And thank you so much in advance.
Right. That's all the time that we've got on this podcast episode. I hope you enjoyed your debut, Alex. Wasn't too painful.
No, it was great. Thank you for having me again. And thanks for the last minute plug.
Well, we'll hopefully get you back on again very soon. Yeah, so it's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from Alex. Oh, sorry, this is the bit where we get you to say goodbye, yeah. I should have really prepared you for that prior to then just jumping into it. But as a long-time listener, I assume that you would know, so. And finally, it's goodbye from Kev.
Cheerio.